You want something higher to put it under there?
Okay. The date is July 19th, 2005. My name is Adam Gregg, and I'm interviewing John Dreyer about his World War II experiences. Okay, to start out, could you tell me the date and place of your birth?
I was born in Clear Lake, South Dakota, 1929, April 23.
Okay, and where did you live as you were growing up?
Well, we lived partly in South Dakota there at Clear Lake, and then we moved to Clear City, Minnesota for 4 years. And from there we moved to Sioux County here, just south of Sioux Center.
And about what year did you move to Sioux County?
Oh, gee. 1929.
And where did you go to school before the war?
I went to a country school, a two-room country school, just south of Sioux Center, and then went to high school in Sioux Center.
And did you work at all before the war?
Yeah, I worked down at the Million Dollar Corner, pumping gas for 15 cents an hour and 15 cents a gallon.
Could you talk a little bit about what your experience was like in the years before the war as the country was fighting through the Great Depression?
Well, we didn't have a lot of money, but we had a lot of good living. My folks lived on the farm, and we always had plenty to eat during the Depression. And I think we grew up in a pretty good time.
And what were your thoughts as war eventually broke out in Europe, but this is before the U.S. got involved?
What were my thoughts?
Yeah.
I was worried to have to go to the army, which we did, you know. But I don't know just what to tell you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, how about when the U.S. was brought into the war by the attack at Pearl Harbor? Can you remember how you felt when that happened?
Well, we knew we were up against it, you know, that we'd have to go to the service, and I didn't really rush into it at all. I waited for them to draft me.
And how did you feel about that when you were drafted?
I don't remember. I just felt we had to go, and that was it. There was no ifs or ands, you know.
Mm-hmm. At that time, did you discuss it with your parents, or did you have a girlfriend or a wife at the time who you
I had a girlfriend.
Like that?
Yeah. Hated to leave them, of course, but we drafted us in, and that was it.
And where were you living at the time you were drafted?
We was living in a farm south and a little east of Sioux Center.
And what branch of the service did you join?
The Air Force. I went into the Air Force. I was in the Air Force a while, and then I was detached to the Merchant Marines for 29 days. And then I was reattached to the Air Force again after I got overseas.
And why did you pick the service branch that you joined?
I didn't pick it. They put us there.
Okay. How did that work? Was there any method to it?
Just here you are. You know, they told us what to do. We didn't tell them. They put us where they wanted us, and they gave us a lot of written exams and so forth. And there we were, wherever we were, you know. I took my basic training down in St. Petersburg, Florida. And I was there about 3 months. You want me to go ahead with this?
Yes, please.
And then we went to Scott Field in Illinois. We was only there a very short while, and then they transferred us over to Madison, Wisconsin. And I went to school there for 6 months, electronic school, radio school. Graduated from that and sent us over to Fresno, California. And we was there about a month and a half, I guess. It loaded us on a train and we went to Smyrna, Tennessee. I was there maybe 3 months and they sent us to Hampton Roads, Virginia. It loaded us on a ship and the way we went. We crossed the Atlantic and we was down by Gibraltar when our convoy split. One went up to Europe and the other one went through, we went through the Mediterranean down through Suez. And then I rejoined the Air Force again.
Talking a little bit more about your training, did you feel it was difficult, and how did you get through that?
Well, that was mainly in St. Petersburg. We lived right in a hotel. And that sounded pretty nice, but there was 8 of us in one room in double bank bunks, you know. And they'd get us up in the morning, and we had to go through calisthenics and all that stuff. But then we'd go to breakfast and come back, and we'd have about 20 minutes to do whatever we had to do. And then we had to drop out again and go to drill field and do that all morning. I come back for dinner, and after dinner go and do it again. Sometimes we'd go on a march of about 20 miles and come back all pooped out, you know. I don't know what else to tell you.
Okay. You mentioned when you crossed the ocean in that boat. What was that crossing like?
Well, it was real nice until we got down by Bermuda. It was beautiful weather then. And after we left Bermuda, boy, we got hit a storm, and that old boat was just rocking from one end to the other just like that, you know. And I loved it. I was having a good time. Most of the guys had their head over the side. We're getting rid of their meal. But I just enjoyed it. And even now and then we'd have, they'd shoot out death bombs, you know. They thought there was a sub around. But we had 140 ships that we could count in that convoy. And we was headed for we didn't know where. We had an aircraft carrier with us and a bunch of PT boats. And everything went pretty smoothly until we got down to Gibraltar. And then there was a pack of subs there. We had to fend off, you know. And it went pretty good until we got into the Mediterranean. And one night about 8 o'clock, The Nazis came over with about 100 airplanes and just bombed the dickens out of us, you know. And I was on a gun then, and we had to shoot at these airplanes, and those buggers would come down about 8 feet off the water so that we couldn't shoot, because then we'd hit the lane across. You understand the lanes, shipping lanes. There's a row of boats here and a row of boats there, maybe a block apart. So we couldn't fire at those airplanes until they got up in the air again, you know. And we did shoot one down, and he tried to land on our stern. And if I had put my hand up, I could have touched his wing as he went over. And he landed in the water right behind us on fire. So he went to the bottom. And the rest of us had to go and change our underwear. And I'm not kidding. You just get so scared that you do lose your water, you know. I don't know what much else to tell you. Well, the rest of the night was, everybody was trigger happy. They thought there was a bird up there, they'd shoot it down, you know. It was all night long, it was just a big fireworks.
How long do you suppose that encounter lasted?
I don't really think it lasted, the actual attack, I don't think it lasted over 30 minutes. It was pretty hard for me to tell because we was excited, you know. And we had a second lieutenant with us. And after it was all over, we couldn't find him. And we looked all through the boat and finally found him about almost on the bottom of the ship underneath the table. That man was so scared, he was just shivering and couldn't talk. He was just crying his eyes out. And they took care of him that night, but we never saw him again. I don't know what happened to him. Some of the guys thought he went overboard. But I don't know. I still wonder about it. But after that, then things went pretty smooth. We did get shot at a few times, but fortunately most of them missed.
You mentioned earlier that you had to fend off some of the Nazi submarines. How did you do that?
They'd shoot depth bombs. They'd go out just about like that. And then they'd sink to whatever depth they had them set, and they'd go blow up. It just, water would come up. I don't know if they ever got any or not.
Okay, and how would you describe your job once you reattached with the Air Force?
Oh, I was mainly a radio operator. But as time wore on, we got used to each other's job. I even started flying. I could fly that airplane probably as good as the rest of them could. But it really wasn't legal, but we did it anyhow. The crew gets to be kind of a family, is what it happens. And we did each other's job. And we hauled freight most of the time, or ammunition, or whatever they wanted us to fly. We'd pick up mail. And we even flew beer into different places. Wasn't supposed to be any beer over there, but there was. And you name it, we flew it. Dead bodies. That was the hardest part. We lost two men over there. And it was automobile accident is what happened. And we had to take care of them ourselves. We put them in, I don't know if I should go into that. We welded them in metal containers, put them in there and welded a cap over them. Took them up on the hill and buried them. And I don't know if they picked them up again or not. But that's the only two that we lost.
Was that pretty difficult?
One was from Omaha. Yeah. But we flew a lot of ammunition up to the Flying Tigers. I think you probably heard of them. Just a bunch of guys over there fighting the Japs from the backside in China. And we'd fly an airplane to the bottom of the mountains there, then another crew would come and pick that airplane up. And they had to have oxygen because they had to get up above 25,000 feet to get over the mountains. And we'd just take the empty back again and fly it until we found a full one and we'd turn around and go back again. Yeah.
On your many flights, where in the world did you go, I guess?
We went all over. We went up into Italy, and then we'd go back again down into, I can't think of that country, and pick up a loaded one, and that one probably would have to go to someplace in Europe or over to the Flying Tigers. They needed a lot of stuff. They had to have a lot of ammunition. They'd fly and overhauled engines, reconditioned engines, and we'd fly the ones that were wore out back again, and then eventually end up in the United States. They never unloaded the airplane until they got to the United States. It just a different crew would pick it up.
And in all that time in the air, did you ever come under fire, or were there any incidents?
Oh, occasionally we'd see a bullet come up through the wing. But most of the time we would try to avoid it. All we had was a .45, you know. It didn't do much.
And who was in charge of that?
What?
Who was in charge of the .45?
That was a revolver, you know. We each carried one.
Oh, okay.
We each carried one in case we got shot down or something.
The planes weren't armed at all then?
No, there wasn't. The only guns were the ones we carried. And we never used them to speak of. If it's so doggone heavy, you start walking crooked toward the end of the day.
So while you were abroad, how did you stay in touch with your family?
How did you stay? By letter. There was no phones at that time. I was overseas about 6 months before my folks ever knew where I was at. We couldn't tell them. If you put it in an envelope, they would scratch it out. And we tried to let them know underhanded, but it never worked. But I was overseas just about 2 years. It didn't bother me being gone. we seen a half of the world, you know. And we had our good times. We even went hunting in the Sahara Desert. We got about 8 gazelles one day. We took out a whole case of ammunition, and we had, I think it was 3 guns, and boy, we used it all. We weren't very good shots, but we got them. That's the only meat that we had at that time. That's the reason we went. And they butchered it in the mess hall there and prepared it there.
Can you talk a little bit more about the food? What was the food like?
The food? It wasn't too bad. You got used to it, you know. The only thing I didn't like was mutton. I hated that sheep meat. Most of it came from Australia, and it was a big old fat sheep, you know. And anytime they had that, we went to the PX instead. Got along without it. But then again, on the other hand, too, we've had some pretty good steaks there, too. We never had to eat, I think they call them MRIs now. But we never had that unless we got awful hungry. But we'd fly in, and generally there was a mess hall someplace. We could get something to eat. When I was headed home, I was down in Abadan, Iraq, Iran, and I left from Abadan there. And from there we went to, you want me to tell this now?
Yes, please.
From there we went to, stopped in Athens, Greece, and from there we flew to Rome, stayed in Rome overnight in Italy. Next morning we took off for Paris, and we was going to set down in Paris, but we got there and it was fogged in. We couldn't get down. We didn't have the instruments at that time like you got now. And so we had to turn around and go back to Marseille, France. And then we got there at midnight. So they got us something to eat, and we refueled our airplane, put 3,300 gallons of gas on it. And then we took off and we went right across Spain, which was neutral at that time. But we flew without lights and got as high as we could. And we headed for the Azores in the middle of the Atlantic. And we got there at noon. We left at midnight and got there at noon, and we refueled again and got something to eat, and we took off, and we got out 700 miles, and they called us back because we couldn't land in Newfoundland. It was all snow. And we got back to the Azores and refueled and got something to eat and did the same thing again. And we got out 700, came back for the third time. And third time we made it. So we sat down in St. John's, Newfoundland, and refueled and stretched and got something to eat, and headed down the eastern seaboard of the United States. And we crossed over New York City and we landed at Washington, D.C. I guess about 10 o'clock in the evening. Got out and we stooped down, kissed the good old United States. And from there, we found a place to sleep that night in one of the barracks there, and got us up the next morning and went to eat. And they was going to put us to work, and that didn't suit us too well. And they changed their mind and sent us over to someplace south, north of Chicago. I can't think of the name. But it was a... Anyhow, they gave us our discharge there, and we headed for home. And that was about 2 days before Christmas, which suited us fine.
Were you able to make it home for Christmas then?
We made it home for Christmas. My girlfriend, my folks, they met me at the train in Lamar's. From Chicago, I went to Lamar's. I got off in Lamar's. Wherever I see that train yet, or that track there, I think of it. Well, you got any questions?
Sure. Well, what was that reunion like then when you got home and for that Christmas?
Well, I had a pretty good kiss. And it was really fun, or nice to see everybody again. I hadn't been home for 2 years then. Yeah. We just kind of enjoyed the next few days.
How did that compare to other holidays while you were away? What were those holidays like?
Oh, well, like Christmas, they usually had a pretty good, Thanksgiving, they had a pretty good feast for us. They usually ate real good. And Christmas time, the same way. And we usually had our own celebration, you might say. When the war was over, then, I was standing in front of the mess hall when they announced it over the loudspeaker that that Japan or Germany, whenever each one surrendered, they announced it. When they was over in Europe, then we knew we was going to go home. They was getting us ready to go to Japan at that time. We'd have been gone in about a week if they hadn't surrendered. So then that changed everything again. We had to, it took another 2 months or 3 months before we could go home. But then when they dropped that bomb, that changed everything again for us. It would have been an awful fight getting into Japan. We figured that we would die there, is what we figured. Because they were fighters, boy, they were really fighters.
So overall, how would you say you feel about the decision to use the atomic bomb?
I think it was a good thing. Some of my kids, they kind of questioned that fact, and I said, well, if they hadn't used that, you wouldn't be here today. Because, like I just said, I figured we'd die there. And that wasn't only my thoughts, everybody else was thinking the same thing. And boy, we liked it when that bomb was dropped.
What would you say, and this might be kind of a difficult question, and you don't have to answer it if you don't want, but what would you say was your single greatest fear?
Would you repeat that?
Yeah. What would you say was your single greatest fear?
Thing of fear?
Yeah. What were you most afraid of while you were in the service?
Sinking that boat. I was always worried about that a little bit. And then another thing, when we were in that trip from Marseille, France, to the Wells, that island in the ocean,
Azores.
The Azores. It was taking so long, and those gas gauges were going towards E, and finally they were laying on E, you know, and there was nothing but water underneath of us, and pretty soon we seen that rocky coast of the Azores, and that felt pretty good, even if it was rocks. We had to go down on it, you know. I feared going down in the water. That'd be the end of it. Nobody would ever know. That's, I think, probably the only thing I worried about. Once in a while, an engine would cough, you know, and it'd make you sit up and straight right now.
Did you ever sustain any injuries?
No.
How did you and your fellow soldiers entertain yourself when maybe the times weren't as busy, had some time to kill?
How did we entertain ourselves? We had a radio, for one thing, and we'd play ball and different things like that. We had checkerboards and things. Did a lot of sleeping if we could had the time. I don't know how to answer that anymore. We just put in time.
Okay. Did you ever go on leave?
Yeah.
And what did you do during that time?
As we landed there at Cairo, Egypt, and I was in the went into the day room one day, and there was a paper hanging there, and anybody wanted to go on leave to the Israel or Palestine to sign up. Well, I says to my buddy there, I says, we got nothing to lose, let's sign up. So we signed up, and they called us in a day later and gave us our leave, and we went to Palestine for a week. And we seen all the things that were to see there, Garden of Gethsemane and all the churches, and seen everything there. And they was there a week, and they went back again. They flew us back. A year later, they did the same thing. I was there again for another week. Spent 2 weeks in the Holy Land. I always figured, boy, that was something that would never happen otherwise. I still think about the time I have there. Probably walked where Jesus walked, you know. I really felt we was very fortunate to have done that.
What did you think of your fellow soldiers? You mentioned it was kind of a family-like atmosphere in your crew. Could you kind of expand on that relationship a little bit?
Oh, we'd do anything for each other. I mean, it got to be a family, is what. And one got hurt, or one of those two that got killed, it was bad. But we got to know each other, and they're just like brothers.
Did you keep in contact with any of them after the war?
I did for two of them. One was from Sioux Falls, and the other one was in Indiana. And the one in Indiana died, and I don't know what happened to the one in Sioux Falls. I lost track of him. He was a big, great big fella. He was a diesel man, and He moved to Sioux City, and that's the last I heard of him.
How many were there on your crew?
On the crew?
Yeah.
We had five. Five of us. Of course, we had all the guys on the, that were taking care of the airplane, too. And the crews. And, there was always a bunch of swell fellows. We got along real good.
What were interracial relations like in the military at that time? Can you describe that?
What did you say?
What were the interracial relationships between whites and blacks or whites and Hispanics like during that time in the military?
Well, we really didn't have any blacks with us at all. There was a few on the, we'd run into a few on the airport. Fields, but we never got close to any of them. They more or less were separated at that time. I think we had two of them on the ship going over. We had boxing matches and stuff like that then.
What was that like?
Oh, it was fun. They never got me in on that.
While you were in the service, did you keep a personal diary or anything?
No, not really. I did write home and describe my time in the Holy Land. I did that. We lost that, so I don't know where that went. Sent it to my folks, and I don't know what happened to it.
What did you do? We talked about your kind of wild trip on the way returning back to the U.S. What was the readjustment like when you did get back to the U.S. in the days and weeks following your return and through the holidays and whatnot?
Well, we more or less went back to the normal everyday life again. First few weeks, of course, we did a lot of visiting and did different things. I had to overhaul my car. It was pretty well to the end. I don't know what else to tell you.
Did you feel like any of your relationships, either with family or with your girlfriend, had changed at all when you returned from your military service?
Did they change, you say?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't believe so.
Okay.
I got married about a year after I got home. Settled over here by Ayrton then.
The same girlfriend?
Yeah. Yeah, we had two girls and three boys there. You knew a few of them. Did you know the oldest one, Liam?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. He went to school here, too.
Did you make use of the GI Bill in any way when you came back?
No, but I made use of the VA hospital in Sioux Falls. I get my medication from them. See them about twice a year.
Okay, and what did you go on to do as a career after the war?
What did I do?
Yeah.
I became a farmer. I did fly my own airplane, too. Fact is, I owned one for a while. And my son-in-law was taking lessons, and he decided to land in the alfalfa field, which didn't go work. The front wheel balled up and flipped it over and totaled it out. He didn't get hurt, though.
What would you use that for? Just personal enjoyment, or?
Enjoyment. I love to fly. I still do. Do you know Earl?
I don't think I do.
He runs the airport at Lamar's. And I more or less taught him to fly. And then he went on and he flies a Learjet now. Right now he's grounded because he had a stent put in. And they won't let him fly for 6 months.
Do you feel after the war that you took part in the post-war economic boom?
Would you repeat that?
Yeah, sure. Do you feel you took part in the post-war economic boom, prosperous times following World War II?
No, I don't believe so. I just started farming and farmed for about 38 years. As a farmer, you know, they take what they give you.
Okay, I'd like to talk a little bit about maybe kind of the long-term effects of your service. For example, do you think your military experience influenced or influences your thinking about war or about the military in general?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And how would you say it does that?
Well, I have a question about going into Iraq. I think we should have taken more time there. Got more prepared than what he used. I think he went in a little quick. Hussein had to get kicked out. He had to get, there was no two ways about that. Somebody had to do something, and I guess we had to do it. But it hurts me. See all these young men getting killed. That's bad. And I got a grandson that's going back over there again, you know. It just worries you. Funny part about it, when I was in there, that didn't worry me, my son. I just took every day as it came. And I guess that's all I got to say about it. I don't know.
Okay. What about previous wars? Did it affect the way you thought about, say, Korea and Vietnam?
I don't think Vietnam was necessary either. I think they just got trigger happy. At least I couldn't see anywhere any good results there. But I'm no expert at war.
Mm-hmm. Expanding on that question just a little bit, do you think your military experiences influence you politically in any way, in terms of your political party preferences or your voting preferences or whatever it is?
I think so. Just how, it would be hard to explain. I make sure I vote every time, and I always have. It's Since I was 21, I've voted every time overseas, too. And I think everybody should do that. Like Jesse being over there now, it just, I know he's doing good. Somebody's got to do it.
Do you ever watch today's war movies? And what do you think about those?
Oh, there's a big show most of the time. It's a lot of it expanded.
How do you think your life might have been different if you hadn't served in the military?
I don't know, I never thought of that. I'd probably had more money. I know there's some guys that never went in are pretty wealthy right now. And that's not my case. I'm living here, but this is under insurance here. I don't know if I could expand on that or not.
Okay.
I don't look down on any guy that hasn't served.